welcome everyone to the Screamcast episode 88. I am Sean DeRager, and with me, with me is the lovable asshole himself, Brad Henderson.
I'm finally, people are coming around. They're like finally realizing that.
And after long last, the much overdue BJ Colangelo back on the show.
I am back, and I brought a sinus infection with me.
It's okay.
It's so great.
When's the last time you were on the show with us?
Nam, I think.
Been forever?
Nam.
I don't know.
Back in Nam.
Back in Nam. Seen some shit.
Okay.
I don't think I was allowed to vote the last time I was here. I don't know. It was been a while.
Damn.
Well, this is our first, I would say, official show of the year. We had our, best of 2015 last week, which garnered a bunch of good responses. It's cool to hear everyone kind of, getting stuff on their own doorstep based on recommendations from Brad and myself and others that are on the show. So that's always kind of cool to see those coming in.
Talk a lot of people into some crazy shit, it seems. So
I apologize, everyone.
Maybe people just want to hear lists.
The lists have been insane. People like lists. So, we've ramped up with some of the writing on the site. Josh Obershaw is kicking it into gear. He's going to be posting pretty regularly as far as the news items go and some other stories here and there. Jason S. Hornsby is a new writer on the site.
You were on it with names tonight.
Yeah, man.
You're his reading. Article on, oh my God.
I'm not actually not reading anything right now. His article on Charlie Kaufman is pretty great. And when I first read it, I was like, are you serious? Because Brad just texted me the article out of the blue, and I'm like, what the fuck is this?
It's really out of nowhere. When I first read it, it was kind of jarring. I knew Jason was doing it, but I didn't know kind of like how in depth and how fucking crazy the conspiracy theories are. Cause it's not like, a normal conspiracy, like, fucking all 9/11 was George Bush or something. No, these things are pretty intricate that are pretty out there. And the way Jason presents it, it's really fun because it can't be a coincidence type of thing, cause it's like one of those things where, like Pontypool predicted the Sandy Hook. You ever hear about that?
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's a crazy theory.
Yeah, in Pontypool, because when they're listening to the broadcast, they hear Sandy Hook, and then there's a number that follows, which means a shooting.
Okay,
and it's pretty crazy. But, I mean, all in all, that's a coincidence. But the stuff that Charlie Kaufman's putting in, it's just a little too obvious, and it's kind of an eye opener even for me. I know Charlie Kaufman's a kind of a weirdo, but the article really opens it up.
Yeah.
So now I'm kind of anxious to even rewatch those films, see if I could pick up on anything else.
Yeah, and then you, Brad, have an article on there about Desiree Castell.
Yeah, which kind of blew up a little bit, which I was happy about because it's one of those things that no one really knows what happened to her. And not that I'm, trying to find out what happened or kind of, obviously she went into hiding for a reason, which, we all should respect that. However, it was one of those things where she is such a, adorable, charming person as far as what she's like in her interviews and even on screen. I mean, I know we're talking about pornography here, but I mean, she's still a very charming woman, even in those films. And
I mean, I'm like saying, I know. Yeah. I've watched every single one.
She's just great. And it was just one of those things where she had this huge career for, 4 years and kind of took the industry by storm. And all of a sudden she just disappeared for reasons unknown. There's a lot of things that are said, which I explain in the article. But it just kind of opened some eyes on such a kind of a beautiful soul in a way. When I watch her films, like, it's one of those things, she is adorable. She is pretty, she has sex, she has boobs, big deal, but she really carries the films. And it's, if you took the hardcore pornography out of it, you would have kind of some really, really awesome sex comedies from the 80s. And I think that's why I'm kind of drawn to it.
Yeah.
And plus boobs. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is a shame that she didn't kind of jump to more kind of mainstream acting. That it said sounds like the adult industry kind of kept her from that in a way.
That's kind of what she wanted, is from what I gathered. I did a couple interviews here and there for people that actually didn't want to be, named in the article, that did know her personally. And that was one thing. I didn't want to go into too much detail because I didn't want to people on the internet are weird. But yeah, she did really try to become more mainstream, and she just couldn't make it.
Yeah,
and I think that has to deal with awkwardness in her roles. You could tell she was awkward. It wasn't awkward because of pornography; she's just an awkward person. But that was part of her charm and why she was so charismatic. Hmm.
Interesting. Well, there's some good stuff for all of you people to read over there on the site at thescreamcast.com if you haven't yet. It's in the evening, so I'm not drinking any coffee, so I can't really plug what I'm drinking. I'm drinking a vodka and Coke Zero.
Wow.
Keep it classy.
Hardcore.
But, of course, visit our sponsors. Go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors and give all them some love. Of course, Coffee Shop of Horrors and grindhousevideo.com. And if you purchase anything from those two and send us an email at readme@thescreamcast.com of your transaction, we'll enter you in the hat for our next drawing. So we've already received a couple of those, which is cool.
What kind of hat is it? Do you really do a hat?
Yeah, I have like this stupid fedora that I bought in.
I was just about to say, you motherfucker, you probably own a fedora.
Please tell me that it's at least like purple leopard print that you got from like Six Flags Great America. So that it's not serious.
It's serious, but it's like beach. Though. It's by the beach.
Serious? What the
no.
Fuck? All right, let's go back. I'm gonna go back to a couple tweets.
I don't wear it anymore.
Wait. I want to go back.
Just burn it.
I want to go back, and I want to say from one of our listeners made a tweet saying, "How many times does Brad Henderson eye roll?" And I was like, you know what? I've actually never eye rolled at Sean. Sean has some crazy opinions, but I think it's all in good fun, and we do friendly bashing. But that was a total fucking eye roll with a fedora.
I seriously wore it for a while. Thought it looked cool.
A while.
You thought, well, I'm here
a
to tell
years
you,
back.
You thought
it's
wrong,
a rape
Sean.
Hat.
It's a rape.
Okay, hey, that, no.
All right.
No.
To be fair, a lot of people were wearing them.
No.
To be fair, people. Everyone who wore them all looked terrible.
I like that Brad thinks that he's made amazing fashion choices his entire life.
Who?
You.
I have.
All right, moving along. Let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Hey, I'm going to interrupt you. I think that before we jump into what's on our doorstep, we should take a quick second to acknowledge that Angus Grimm passed away today.
Oh, shit. Yes.
Because that is some serious, horror iconography that we lost today. And, I mean, it's always sad when we lose somebody, but at least, he did lead a very long and fulfilling life. So we at least have that to be fortunate. This wasn't some, shocking, recent, out of nowhere kind of event. But I don't know if you guys ever had the opportunity to meet Angus, but, I had the chance to, and he was just such a pleasant human being, just very professional, very kind, very courteous, excellent listener, and just a very warm person. And I think, a lot of people were expressing the same sentiments. And, it's a bummer that we lost him, but, it's nice to know that we had somebody that was such a genuinely good person to have such a great impact on a genre that we all love so much.
He seems to have loved whenever he was at the conventions. Like, people have really great stories of meeting him at conventions.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
Absolutely. He loved love taking pictures with people. You know, he a lot of fans, you know, or a lot of celebrities hated, you know, and fans would, you know, make you say your famous lines or whatever. But you know, the one convention that I saw him at, he must have said "boy" like 85 billion times, and he loved it every single time.
Yeah,
and
that's cool.
That just says a lot about him, and he, you know, really loved his fans, and he was a cool dude. Yeah. So I mean, rest in peace, Angus Grimm. You have a metal as fuck name, and you're awesome.
Yes, sir. Brad, did you have anything to say about Angus Grimm?
No, I mean, I watched his movies growing up, so, you know, it was, I saw Phantasm at a very young age, and it kind of creeped that one, graveyard scene, or not graveyard, but it's a dream sequence where he wakes up and the, like, the zombies, like, reach up out of the ground and, like, grab him when he's in bed. Oh, that kind of freaked me out when I was little, but, you know, it's just piggybacking on what, BJ said. It was just, I met him one time at a convention. He was just very nice. He was actually sitting next to George Romero, and both of those guys are, you know, George Romero is the same way. He's just a very nice, and honest person. And, he's there for a reason, you know, and Angus, Scrim was just happy to be there. And I, you know, just went up, I didn't ask for an autograph. I said, I'm not an autograph person, but just went up and shook his hand. And, you know, he just said, thank you. And that's pretty much it. I mean, it is really sad that we lose these people that are kind of close to us, because, you know, people always say, like, so why does celebrity deaths affect you? You don't know the person. Well, when you kind of grow up with the person, you know, and watch a lot of their movies, and they're kind of a staple in your childhood, Phantasm's a staple in mine. You know, it's one of my favorite horror films. And, you know, even the whole series, aside from 4, I guess. 5's not that great either, but 1 through 3, I think, had a huge impact on me. That as even when I was growing up, writing weird is okay, because those movies are ultra weird, and you know, it's kind of a nightmarish, weirdish horror film, and I've always adored that. And he portrayed that character in such a sinister way. You know, and then you meet him in real life, and he's just so nice. It's funny to watch him immediately turn into the tall man.
Right.
So, yeah, he'll be missed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. And with that, let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow. I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
I will go first. I'll try to blow through them. I'll try to blow through them. I actually, for as much time as I've been gone, I haven't really gotten a chance to watch a whole lot of new things. I've done a lot of rewatching of things that I love, so I'll try not to rehash those. I'll just do the stuff that's new that I've seen. Like everyone else in America, I binge-watched Making a Murderer. It just makes me angry.
I couldn't sleep. Did you have nights like that? If you stopped watching it, like, I couldn't sleep until I saw the next episode.
Well, what's weird about it is that the events, I mean, I always tell people, you know, I'm from Chicago, which I am, but where my parents live is in a suburb that's, you know, the midpoint between Chicago and Milwaukee, and it's right on the border of Illinois and Wisconsin. So growing up, you know, we were like, you can throw a rock off my roof and hit the Wisconsin state line. That's not an exaggeration. So growing up, you know, we were in very, like, very close proximity to where that took place. So when this stuff came out, you know, I immediately called my mom and I was like, hey, do you remember any of this? She's like, yeah, it was a huge fucking deal. And she knew everything about it, I guess, when it was happening. Because my mom's like a true crime junkie. And, you know, she worked at home my whole life. So I guess she, like, followed it she's my mom's one of those people that like when like the Casey Anthony stuff was going on or like JonBenet Ramsey, like she was like that creepy person who like followed all the conspiracy theories and like just was glued to the TV. So when the Stephen Avery case was going on, like she was doing that like as it happened. So when I told her about the documentary, she's like, oh yeah, no, they totally set him up. And so then I turned into my mom about it. And then like 2 days later, I got a call from the Manitowoc County animal shelter because my sister's trying to adopt a dog, and that's where the shelter was. I was like, ah, fuck, I can't escape this place. Anyway, so I binge watched that. It just makes me angry and hate the world more than anything. So I watched that. I saw Star Wars, really, really enjoyed it, but I mean, who fucking didn't? I saw Manson Family Reunion or
vacation.
Thank you. Manson Family Vacation. Really liked that a lot more than I thought I would.
It's pleasant. It's a pleasant movie.
Yeah. I mean, Duplass Brothers films are really hit or miss for me. Sometimes I really like them or sometimes I think that they're, you know, self-serving shit, but this one I really, really liked a lot. I thought it was really endearing and sort of tackled such a strange sort of subject matter that we don't really talk about, which is kind of that weird fascination that we have with like the sensationalism around tragedy. So that was something that I really liked. I watched Last Shift, but we'll talk about that later. Watched Circle.
I remember hearing about it. I can see the cover, but I never watched it.
Yeah, it was a Netflix find. It's not terrible. Very, very good idea. I think that it's a movie that's trying to say something really important, but doesn't know exactly how to say it, I guess.
Is it the movie where it's like complete darkness and the people are just like in front of one another?
It's not in complete darkness. It's a one room, starts with 50 people and basically they're on what appears to be like an alien ship. And every like 5 seconds or so, somebody dies, and they slowly realize that they can control who dies by voting. And it's kind of this, you know, debate of, you know, what about humanity do you value? Like, you know, what is it in humans that we deem more important and worthy of life? So like that's the underlying message, which I found very fascinating because then it brings up all these, you know, these debates amongst people. Like you get the people that bring up, you know, well, let's kill off all the old people because, you know, they've already lived their lives, or, you know, we should kill off this one because she's gay, or we should kill off you because you're poor, or you're not even from this country. Like, so it brings up all these, you know, debates that we have all the time, of, you know, who is more valuable in life, which I really, really enjoy. Cause I live for shit like that. But,
you ever see the human race?
What's that?
You ever see the human race? Movie that came out like last year, but these people are, obviously, you know, an extraterrestrial being is controlling it, but there's like 100 people that are put on this track. If they stay on the track, they have to walk or run. If you go off the track, your head blows up. And if you're overlapped, if you're overlapped, your head blows up. And everybody from people in walkers to young kids are like 100 people are put on this. On this track, and it's the human race, and you have to decide whether you are going to bolt, if you're going to band together, or if you're going to help people. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. It's not a very good movie, but the idea of it is really cool.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I feel about Circle, is that, you know, the it has very similar elements to, you know, this film you're talking about, where the idea and the core of it is very interesting and is everything that I like. Just the execution of it is a little wonky and got some kind of, like, the deaths aren't that great. But it's a nice movie for actors, because it's a movie where it's almost entirely dialogue. So there's some really great speeches in it. There's some really great lines. So I enjoyed that. It's one of those Netflix finds that you know, fuck it, I'm just going to watch it. It has 3 stars. Maybe I'll like it. And it's like, I don't regret watching it. I mean, I'm probably never going to watch it again, but you know, I'm not going to not recommend it to somebody. So that was good. I did a lot of trying to, like, cram in things before the end of the year to make sure that I saw stuff for my top 10. But everything that was on my top 10 list was stuff that I've already talked about on the show. My list is over on Icons of Fright, if anyone wants to read it.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I read yours last week or so.
Yeah, but I want to say, for those that are lazy, I'm pretty sure it was... I'm not even going to bring it up because I don't even know off the top of my head. All I know is my number one... my number one of the year was Spring. Okay, so I know it was Spring. This is not going to be in the right order, but I had Spring, It Follows, The Final Girls, What We Do in the Shadows, We Are Still Here, Invalid, The Midnight Swim. Oh God, that's 7. I had 3 more. What the hell else did I like this year? Oh God, this is bad. Deathgasm. I had 2 more. Oh shit, I'm terrible. I don't know. I had 2 other ones.
It's all good. We'll put the link in the show notes. It's all good.
Yeah. Either
we'll make
way,
those to a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there
go
you go.
Go to iconsoffright.com and.
Yeah, it's in there. Pretty much, that's kind of all I've seen. Everything else, I watched a shitload of Christmas movies. I watched a shitload of wrestling, and that's been my last 2 months.
Very cool. I'll go really quick, Brad, and then we'll let you unleash.
Let you unleash the hounds.
Because I've been. My wife had some surgery, so I was like, "Oh, I'll have some downtime to watch some shit." No, I didn't. Because I'm taking care of 4 people instead of 3. And I realize how much shit my wife does on a daily basis.
Congratulations.
It's ridiculous. But I did get a few things in that I wouldn't want to mention. Brad mentioned Bone Tomahawk last week on your top 10 list, and I'm kicking myself for not including that, because that would have been an honorable mention. If not, I may have moved something off my list to put that up on there, but
you should have.
I know. The film was fantastic, and we've talked about it like crazy on this, and people have been checking it out based on our recommendations, which is fantastic. But it's, you know, it's one of my favorite Kurt Russell performances in recent memory, and everyone else, the acting is just top notch, and there's definitely some jaw dropping holy shit moments in the film, and I would say it's like my favorite kind of humanoid monsters since The Descent. So that's all I got to say about Bone Tomahawk. Because we've talked about it to death. Next up, I finally got around to watching What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, so good.
Oh my God. I wish I would have seen this before I did my top 10 list. Because it was a horror comedy, so I was kind of like, you know, not really that into it, knowing it's a horror comedy. And then I saw that it was going to be kind of like, you know, mockumentary style. And I was like, oh, shit. But it works.
Oh, shit. You don't like mockumentary?
It's so smart.
I think I'd seen so many mockumentaries, like Best in Show, Spinal Tap, stuff like that. I think I've saw so many over a time period. I was just kind of done with them. But this hits on so many levels. The wit, the filming of it. the characters, you fall in love with these goofy vampire characters, and you just kind of are with them through this thing. And it's just fantastic. It's, I can't believe it took me so long to get to this, but if you haven't seen it yet, I think it's on Netflix streaming.
I cried when they said we're werewolves, not swearwolves.
Oh my God. So oh, it's great. Like so, good. So many great moments that I tried showing my wife it. She got about an hour into it. And she liked that hour, but then she's like, how much longer do we have with this? And she was kind of done.
Wow.
But, she gave it an hour. So that's huge in that department.
She gave it a movie.
She will do what okay. She does with whenever I bring out a movie that she's unsure of, she goes, okay, well, this movie has 15 minutes to get me hooked into it. Yeah. Otherwise it's going off. And there's, believe me, there's been some almost, you know, knockdown, drag out fights.
I've dumped people for less.
So her giving this an hour was fantastic, especially her being on medication and stuff like that. You know, we'll give it that. We'll eventually, okay. She will finish it at some point.
She's excused. I'll allow it.
But what a fantastic, like, what a great, great horror comedy. And, I was just amazed just how much I really, really loved the characters and them. And one of the one character who with the mustache who likens like no pun intended, no werewolf pun intended, who likens like why do we eat virgins or drink virgin blood? And he likens it to like, would you eat a sandwich that's been fucked? I mean, come on. Gold. Gold. So that was great. If you haven't watched it, watch it as soon as possible. It's really great. Next up, The Gift, that was on my list for 2015, but
this shit's
really
dark.
I feel like I haven't really got to talk enough about it. You guys need to watch
it. You talked about it on the last show.
I know, but it's in my what we've been. It was on my doorstep. I bought the fucking thing, so
it's fucking
really fucking
dark.
Good. And when BJ first talked about it, I was like, I need to see this. And, you know, BJ's on the show, so I want to talk about it really quick. So fuck off, Brad.
Damn.
But The Gift, fantastic. I talked about it last week. Definitely, and it was a blind buy. I bought the thing for like $24. Because I was just like, God. Well, BJ said like, this is good. I believe
can we please
better...
discuss what's going on with his face, though? Like, what is going on with his face in that movie? What did they do? Like, I'm so confused because he doesn't – I can't remember his name. God, what is his name? Joel Edgerton?
Edgerton. Yeah, yeah. He
Edgerton.
Looks a bit off in
What's
that
wrong
film,
with his face?
He?
Yes, it looks so weird. I don't know if it's because they gave him like – if it's just because they gave him contacts or
yeah, is it
the hairpiece or what's going on.
The hair but or the goatee or something. I don't know.
I don't know what it is, but like you know those – pictures of when like people put ham on their face and try to pretend they're burn victims. Like that's what he looks like in that movie, and it makes me so uncomfortable.
Yeah, they did something. He doesn't look like that in real life. He has a better complexion.
No, he doesn't.
For sure.
Right, because I'm watching this movie, I'm like, God, he looks uglier than shit. And then I was like trying to figure out if he like
I think it was something with his cheekbones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I don't
like
know
they
what
had the,
it was.
Like, they had the goatee on him, and then, like, his cheekbones, like, I mean, obviously he didn't have a lift, but it seems like maybe prosthetics were put on there, and then the goatee
like,
kind of amplified.
Some jowls
like,
put on there or something.
Oh, God.
All I know is it made me not excited to look at his face.
But this movie, though, like, I've had so many moments of, you know, bumping into someone, and they remember you, and you don't remember them. And, you know, each one of those, it's just, you know, kind of, you leave and you're like, you know, my wife would be like, who was that? I'm like, I don't know. You know, I've had so many moments like that in my life. And to have it go from just being some weird little uncomfortable moment to being this thing that impacts your life and that turns and that this film is like that moment of uncomfortableness, like for an hour and a half. And, I don't think a film's really affected me like that in quite some time. So it was definitely really good and But one thing I wanted to mention with the Blu-ray, I got it from Best Buy, and like the slipcase, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes, they put those little stickers on there. Like, mm-hmm. Rotten
it's not
Tomato.
A sticker. They like imprint that.
They freaking put, yeah, they imprint it on the art. So I threw that thing away. I threw the slipcover away. Fuck that.
Yeah, they did that with John Wick and It Follows as well.
That's obnoxious.
So stupid.
Yeah, it's like, it's not a sticker. It's printed it's, on the slipcover.
That's
printed.
Fucking obnoxious. Ugh.
All right. And finally, I wanted to mention this really quick. The movie Stung, which is available on streaming. I finally gave it a shot. And it's like, it's one of those things, like, I love the idea. I love the effects. Why wasn't it better? Like, it, you know, like,
it's like a
movie
really...
that, God, movie like, that bad does not deserve poster art that good.
Yeah, like the poster arts, there's one, like, not the, like, the flip poster art, right, on the Blu-ray is really mm-hmm. fucking good. But,
right?
It's like you have like this angry. Party Down set up with.
I was going to say it's the worst episode of Party
Hornets
Down with
or
the
whatever. Yeah, the effects are great. These giant wasp things. There's just so much more they could have done. They didn't. It has
really
a
silly.
Few moments of
it does have
that,
it
that
has
I dug.
A couple moments here or there, like when but, the wasp like lifts out of the person's body.
Yeah,
like that's super cool. But dude, that movie's just so bland and fucking dull.
It's a lot of nothing to get to something.
Yeah, and it's yep. like,
which may resonate in a little bit.
Dude, that movie feels like it's 4 hours long. Like,
yeah, it really is unfortunate.
Fairly quickly, you know.
Yeah,
just save your time and watch a movie called Infested. It's a lot better.
Or Mosquito, right, Brad?
Mosquito's a shit.
Damn,
so
dude, I love
or
Mosquito.
Ticks. Watch Ticks.
Skeeter. Is better.
Yeah, Skeeter is better than Stung.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that was my what's on my doorstep.
That's Brad. A pretty good doorstep.
All right. I'm going to blow through mine fairly quickly because I got a lot. So first
blow
up,
it.
I...
Blow what? It hard.
All right. I don't understand how this movie is made. I can't wait till it kind of pops up on Netflix and people go ape shit about it. But I'm going to be the first to tell you, this is fucking weird. This movie's called Wrecker, and it is a carbon copy of fucking Duel. And even though they say it's an homage and shit, this shit rips off specific scenes from Duel. All the tense situations, like, you know, two girls on a road trip in a fucking bright red Mustang. I don't know why you would choose a fucking bright red Mustang. And and the filmmaker wants to show the car off like he just bought it. So he's going to show it off like every fucking shot is before we actually – or we cut. We're going to go right to the fucking Mustang like driving 80 miles per hour down the highway. But anyways, like there are so many things – like the one where the sequence where like Dennis Weaver like – the smoke is blowing in the fucking car, so he drives around it. Then the fucking truck speeds up and gets in front of him, and then he's like, motherfucker, and then he drives around and gets in front again, and then the truck drives up and then waves for him to go, and then he does, and there's oncoming traffic. That sequence happens in this movie. The sequence where they go to get gas, and you know, like the sequence where Dennis Weaver is in Duel. He's trying to watch the guy with his boots trying to walk across and then see if he can see him, but things keep on getting in the way and he can't see the driver. That sequence happens in the movie. The two girls go to a diner and they're looking around and they're like, oh my God, who can it be? And they see the truck and they're like looking at everybody and looking at them and they're trying to decide who actually is driving that truck, and they go up to a person and call them out for following them, and then it doesn't turn out to be them. It's a fucking shot for shot, but there's no reference. There's no based on. There's no remake. It's just a flat-out ripoff of fucking Duel. It's insane.
Nice.
Like, this is something – this is plagiarism is what it is. Like, I understand, like, you know, Joyride – takes a lot of things from Duel, but Joyride is its own movie. It uses homages, you know, they homage from Duel and, you know, Road Games and stuff like that, and they make their own movie. This directly rips shit off, and it's insane.
Is this so, like how Lockout directly rips shit?
Escape from New York?
Whatever, no, yeah. It doesn't. Lockout's fucking awesome. just talking
you would
about.
You would like Lockout.
And that's why
no, this
they
is,
have to pay $20 million to Okay, bye.
Yeah, like this is something like I don't know when it's going to happen, but it feels like at some point we're going to hear about this again and someone's going to be suing somebody because it's just too blatant. Like it's a big shot for shot almost. It's just not a very, and it also like, it's just, it's poorly made. It's a very, you know, like I said, how many times can we actually show the car? And it's a bright red Mustang. And it's one of those things where if you want your people to connect with a character, don't give them a fucking 2017 fucking hybrid Mustang or whatever they're driving. Give them something normal. Because once you see that fucking Mustang, you're like, that's a douchebag. You know, you got to give somebody an older car is more down to earth people when you in cinema. So give them a fucking jalopy or something. So anyways, not a very good movie either, but definitely a ripoff of Duel. Second is a movie I thoroughly enjoyed immensely. I don't care how many people hate Max Landis, but American Ultra is fucking funny.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, it's so good.
And it's so good. And I was so pleasantly surprised by this movie. Total like 80s throwback to action movies. It's just the perfect blend of like action, comedy, and drama. Like the dramatic sequences are really, really good. It's really funny at times. The action is fucking phenomenal. And just some of the dialogue is just spot on. I didn't really care for the dialogue between the CIA operatives because it felt a little childish, but I guess that was kind of what they were going for, like that 80s feel where, you know, they weren't strictly professional. It's like almost like little kids bickering back and forth.
Yeah.
But when he buys fireworks from John Leguizamo and he says, hey man, you want to do some acid? He's like, and go to the titty bar. He's like, dude, it's 8:15 in the morning. But anyways, John Leguizamo was great in it.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, I'm not a big Kristen Stewart fan, but, you know, she plays Kristen Stewart, which yeah, is fine.
She
it's
shrugs
fine
her way. She shrugs and mumbles her way through yeah. it.
But I think it's one of those things where you have kind of, I mean, John Leguizamo is definitely a character actor, but Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart play the same characters every fucking movie. But with this, I don't know if it was just how it was directed or if I was just really digging it at the time, but they do really, really well. But I guess this is the kind of roles they're made for in a way. But anyways, definitely go see it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's definitely worth a watch.
I really, really love that movie. Second was, or third, was a film called Kill Game, which was originally pranked. It was P-R-A-N-K apostrophe D. Yes.
Oh, man. We're appealing to the youth.
Oh, God.
So okay. Kill Game is a very much I Know What You Did Last Summer type story where these few characters that are close friends, they have a friend die. He dies 3 years to the date of somebody else that they knew that they accidentally killed. And then someone comes back to kill them all. And it's very, very like 1998-esque, like 97, 98, when those like Scream things were happening, all those films like Valentine and, you
oh,
know,
shit, this is so up my alley.
Yeah. And it, you know, the mask, the killer's mask is fucking great. The kills are really, really fun. They're creative. But it's very much like, you know, we're stuck in 1998 with a direct-to-video horror film that runs an hour and 45 minutes and feels like a soap opera half the time. Because when they pour the drama, when they pour the drama on in this movie, I feel like it's fucking Young and the Restless or some shit.
Is everyone screaming like they're going for the Oscars?
Yes,
because,
they're fucking
oh God,
overacting.
Yes.
They're screaming. And it's like,
I can't wait.
I was laughing every time because they would say, well, it's so-and-so. Well, they're not a suspect. No, I know them. They wouldn't do this. Like everybody
oh,
fucking
God.
Says that for people they love. But it's extremely predictable. It goes on for way, way too long, but it does have some creepy, moments, and the killer, the outfit, you know, it's like boots and a long trench coat and a big machete with this fucking granny mask. It's really effective in that sense, but all in all, you know, kind of by the books, slasher film. Next up was, I have nothing bad to say about this movie. However, I did not like it. It's called Condemned. It's, a rich family. This daughter, her family is always bickering and kind of an abusive family. So she runs away with her boyfriend, and he lives in this fucking apartment complex that's basically condemned. And these people are just getting by living there. But they're not making any payments, like the electricity's on. But I mean, walls are falling down, rats are everywhere. And it's just a bunch of criminal, like low lives that live in there. And her boyfriend lives with a few people in this apartment complex. An infection spreads and people get infected and they turn into murderous beings. It's very Trauma, a Toxic Avenger, street trash, that kind of goopy horror, that gross, like pus filled horror. You know, it's got a lot of that. It's very throwbackish, but it doesn't ever want to kind of get in that realm. Like, it has this kind of like small sense score. They don't overplay it though, you know, cause it's one of those things where it's like, everybody's fucking doing sense scores these days.
Yeah.
But they really want to limit when it plays because it's a really kind of cool sound and a really cool, score for the, like the main score for the film. They only played it right moments. The fucking special effects are incredible for the most part. They do throw in some CGI, gore here or there, but I mean, I really think a lot of the budget did go to the special effects because the infected people like have boils and fucking, you know, pus bucket. Just, I mean, it's just like fucking gross shit that's happening in the film. However, it's nothing new. It's the same film that we've seen 1,000 times, from Trauma and apartment complex being trapped in and just gross horror. It doesn't really give anything new. It just is one of those, you know, Night of the Demons-esque films where we hate everybody and it's just fun to see everything unfold. But I don't know. I really didn't grab me, but I admire the film. I do respect it because it definitely has this kind of cool feel, but the movie isn't there. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a really fun idea and concept, and you know, it doesn't do anything wrong. It just, I guess I was in the mood to probably see something that would really please me. It's something I do want to watch again because now I know what to expect. Because I really didn't know what I was watching when I very first put it in. I didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't know it was a throwback. I didn't know anything. And watching it unfold, it was a lot of fun, but it didn't grab me or anything like that. So check it out. It's on Blu-ray, I think, out now. Next up, I hope BJ has seen this because this would be great for her to talk about. I got to watch Eli Roth's new movie, Knock Knock.
Oh, don't get me fucking started.
Pizza? That's all I know.
I cannot believe that this is a movie. This movie feels like a fucking horny ass 13-year-old kid who has no idea how human interaction work wrote this fucking movie.
You mean an Eli Roth film?
You mean Eli Roth?
Well, the person that's writing these films, like this is a funny story. Whenever Aftershock came out, and then The Stranger. And this is both of those films where Nicholas Lopez, Eli Roth, kind of, you know,
Bro horror
films. And I made a comment on Twitter one time, and I said The Green Inferno I saw Green Inferno first. I'm sorry. Let me take that back. I saw Aftershock, and then I saw Green Inferno. After I saw Green Inferno at Fantastic Fest, I tweeted, I said, Aftershock and Green Inferno feels like the same fucking movie. Because it has the same actors, it uses the same camera, it, you know, it just feels the same, it has the exact same dialogue. The movies just feel identical. And Nicolas Lopez got into an argument with me, a Twitter war. He said, then you didn't watch the movies then. And I said, well, I did fucking watch the movies. I'm sorry, but it feels like the same movie. Feels like you film these movies back to back. I shit you not, when I was at Fantastic Fest and they premiered The Stranger, those motherfuckers were up on stage and they said they got so much from the government to make, you know, they had a budget. So they decided to make four movies back to back. And this is the fourth one. Fucking The Stranger, Knock Knock, fucking Aftershock, Green Inferno, they all feel the same, and this is right in there with there. But aside, they get Keanu Reeves, who I like, but gives the worst performance of his life.
Because he's phoning it in. You could tell he does, was like, well, he does total paycheck.
He does total cage rage moments in this movie to the point where you're laughing. Chance watched this. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, this is like, is this Eli Roth's like idea of having a good night? Is these just two girls show up to fuck him?
Yep.
Like, you know, and I was thinking, all right, we're about 45 minutes in the movie. There's got to be some overall plot of why they want to get in there. Nope. You don't get that either. It's just like, come on, man. Like, this is the worst. Like, if you're going to make
it, self-serving piece of shit I've seen in so long, and I don't understand how people keep giving him money. I don't understand.
Well, we'll see, because this is four movies. They had the budget. We'll see what he does next, because this is done. They had the budget. They had like $4 million for like, you know, all these films, which is mind-blowing that they spent just that little. But the films look terrible. They're using, like, you – like the fucking – camera's like plugged into a goat or something. I don't know what the fuck is happening. It has the worst fucking,
like, goat simulator game.
Like, fucking use, you know, Red, or fucking use your phone or something, because even an iPhone shoots better than that. But one thing I really hated about the film is that you have these two girls that show up at this married man's house who's happily married, who's a good father. I'm a good father. He says that a million times in the film. But you know, it's one of those things where you want the film to kind of teeter on, you know, temptation and desires or a taboo subject. It never does that. You know, you have films like maybe like The Babysitter with Alicia Silverstone, where, you know, you have three men that are infatuated with this girl that plays with temptation and taboo, and it's interesting. This isn't. It's just like, what the fuck do you keep doing? And why do you have this girl pretend that she's a fucking baby, a little girl, and that he basically just raped a child? Like, how, like, why do you have to play that button for so long? Like, if they wanted to do it for, you know, because she pretends like she's fucking 15, you know, oh, you're a pedophile now because you fucked a 15-year-old. Well, okay, that's fun to maybe play with for a second, but they really play that note. And it was just extremely uncomfortable throughout the movie that you had to keep seeing it.
Because he doesn't understand how
human interaction works?
Yes, he doesn't understand it. Because what it is because in his mind, in his fucking mind.
Yes, that's Eli Roth. We're watching Eli Roth.
Yes, because in his mind, you said to yourself, like, I'm a good father. When you keep pounding the I'm a good father line, it makes it, you know, by him being a good father, that vilifies the girls because he's a good man.
No.
But then when you play this, you know, pedophile thing, that makes him a bad person, and it makes, you know, them the victims. It's like, no, it makes you a shitty person for, you know, kind of playing and kind of exploiting this through line of pedophilia, when, like, it's not cool. Like, you don't show something like that.
Yeah,
like,
and
but suddenly she's not 15, therefore it's okay. Like, no, fuck off, dude.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things where they try to iterate reiterate that he's a good person. How many shots, like, they strategically put family photos in every fucking shot of that movie. The hallways are fucking lined with family photos. And, like, writing "I like cum" on the little girl's face on the photo, like, really, motherfucker? Like, that's, like, you know, do we really have to go there with this movie? Like, like, if you're making, if you're a fucking phenomenal filmmaker, if you're Tarantino and you do that, you can maybe get away with it if it's in context. But when you're fucking Eli Roth and all you do is make rape bro movies, fuck you.
Ugh.
So anyways, fuck Knock Knock. Fuck.
Yeah. It's real awful.
I really don't think Eli Roth can come back. I mean, I did like the guy after Hostel. I do enjoy Hostel 1 and 2. I enjoy Cabin Fever. But, I mean, his kind of where he's going now, no. I'm not digging it, bro. So anyways, moving along to a Severin title here. They released Christopher Lee as Count Dracula. This is directed by Jess Franco. I'm not a Jess Franco fan at all because he has made a billion movies and he has like one good one. But I actually enjoyed this one. It's a PG-13 horror film, which is weird, based on Dracula. But definitely one of Franco's better films.
Did they have PG-13 back in 1970? Or did it just feel that way? Was it just PG? PG-13 came about after Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and Gremlins.
Okay. It came out after Gremlins.
It was probably PG, though, because...
Okay.
I thought Gremlins was PG, and then people freaked out about it.
Yeah, something like that.
We need PG-13.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I don't know. It's probably re-rated for the release.
Yeah. Mm.
Well... Okay, so PG, and it is a PG film, which is Jess Franco made a PG movie. I can't believe I'm actually saying that. I didn't know. I just thought this was like a hypersexualized Count Dracula movie where he fucks his like three brides all the time. But it's not. It's kind of like a Count Dracula exists. They know he exists, but they were kind of unaware that he's this powerful vampire. And it kind of goes into this kind of psychological standpoint. Where Dracula can drive people crazy.
Huh, that's cool.
It got a great score, and the special features are really fucking good on this. I actually checked this one out because the transfer is really, really bad with this Blu-ray, so I was kind of hoping they would give a little bit more, and they do. They have this really, really good kind of interview with Christopher Gans, who did like Brotherhood of the Wolf, the Necronomicon movie, Crying Freeman, really, really good filmmaker. And it kind of goes into his infatuation and appreciation for this specific film, this Franco movie. Which one thing I do like about Franco is that he knows how to film a movie. His films look gorgeous. They look really, really good. It's just that I don't know if it's a lost in translation thing where we kind of disembark from how things are actually supposed to be played out to what we think they're supposed to say. And they're saying something completely different, mainly because the person that's typing the subtitles really doesn't speak the language. However, this is not like that. It is, it does has a couple, I think... like a couple Spanish actors here or there, and a couple Italian, like Soledad Miranda is in the film, and she's cute as a button. I tell you what, I know that we talked about her when we talked about Vampire Lesbos and She Killed in Ecstasy. But just a really decent movie. Nothing wrong with it, and the score is fucking great. Sounds good. It's just the transfer isn't that. That great, but everybody should pick it up. If you like, I know there's like a million Dracula movies. That was another thing, is that there are so many fucking Dracula movies, and not all of them are so great. Oh, another thing, there's this fucking special feature on here where Christopher Lee reads Dracula.
Oh,
Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Are you kidding me?
Fucking great.
Oh my god,
so good. I didn't get to watch the whole entire thing.
Is it? But I would download that. Listen, I would rip that and download that to my iPod. iPod yeah. or iPhone or listen to it.
It's a lot of fun. It's, you know, the special features are really good on the disc, so it's definitely worth it. I just think, you know, Severin really did go all out on the special features, mainly probably to make up for the poor transfer, because I'm guessing maybe the film has been destroyed. They don't really go into detail of why.
Yeah, their other release, they talk about, like, the transfers and stuff. Like, this one on the Count Dracula one, there's, like, no mention at all about the transfer, you know?
Yeah, it's really bad.
It says remastered, but they don't go
into specifics. It looks like a VHS print. So next up, unless it's like a really shitty 8mm,
yeah, maybe
print, yeah, that could be it too. Next up we have very underwhelming movie. I didn't really go in and think it was going to be all that great, but it's called Tiger House. It's a home invasion movie. Four men break into a home to kidnap and score money. It plays out like every home invasion movie. As soon as it starts, like the foreshadowing with things like, oh, let me lock this window and let me put the key over here, because you're not going to need that later to get out of this window. You know, that type of shit.
Yeah.
It's just it's a very by the books, by the numbers home invasion movie where – you know, you have the four really bad guys, but the one guy isn't so bad and kind of, you know, friends the people that are in the house. It was just like another kind of like soap opera, like USA Lifetime. This is a Lifetime home invasion movie. Let's just put it that way.
Who's distributing this? I think I saw this for
Super I think Cheap. Magnet. Magnet.
Magnet. Okay. Yeah. Because you're like $12 at Best Buy. I think it's on Netflix. Netflix too. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that appeared on Netflix out of the blue. Not that great. One thing I do want to mention in one sentence, I watched the movie Super Fast. It is a parody of the Fast and the Furious movies by that Lamb and like, what's the other guy's name? Like Serkan, Severin. Sulkin, whatever.
So who gives a fuck?
Friedberg and whatever.
Seltzer?
How do these guys keep making movies?
There's got to be some sort of tax loophole or something.
Like, this is their like nine. I looked it up while the movie is playing because it wasn't any good. They've made nine parody films, and that's all they've done. But that's all they've done.
Well, you know the movie The Producers, like how they try to make. You know, the whole gist of the producers that they get, they're trying to make a play so offensive and horrible that it'll lose money. It's got to be what they're trying to do.
But I'm saying as an artist.
They're not artists, though.
But no. you start off making a parody.
Yeah.
But you think you would kind of make at least one movie. Where if you made strict comedies, you would want to make an action or horror film eventually. No, these guys have written 14 parodies and have directed 9 of them.
And their idea of parody is like, oh, this looks like Superman. Doesn't that guy look like Superman?
It is beyond bad. Like, I was taking breaks. I went to go poop, and I let the movie play. I turned it up so I could hear it.
Fuck that.
You know, I like, you know, masturbated during it.
I didn't look at the
screen.
That's
it's a really awful movie.
Please tell me there's at least a joke where whoever's playing the Paul Walker character is replaced by another actor in the middle of it, and they just never address it.
No, they're actually – it was really
too
weird.
Witty.
They – all the characters, their character names are the actors' real names in the film. Mm. So, like, Detective Dwayne Johnson and fucking Michelle and Vin. But Paul Walker's character is Lucas, which I thought was kind of interesting. They didn't – I think they were trying to be maybe a little too respectful for that.
Yeah.
But the only funny thing about it is that the guy that plays the Rock character, Dwayne Johnson's character, Hobbs, does a fucking spot on job.
Is he at least profusely sweating through the whole thing?
No, he keeps like all through the film, he keeps putting baby oil on. That was the only funny thing. But the only reason that's funny is because they make that joke in fucking Fast and Furious 6.
Right.
Because Tyrese says, hey, Mia, hide your baby oil. That's the only reason they actually were witty enough to think.
Oh, God. Okay.
That's pretty great.
Next up, real quick, I watched the sequel to Sinister. Sinister 2, of course, is called.
Yeah, that comes out this week.
You know, I was I consider Sinister probably one film that continually like would scare me. Like I watching it, my heart beats. The soundtrack for that movie, it's
that
so unnerving.
Lawnmower.
It's so haunting.
That fucking that lawnmower.
Lawnmower sequence is horrifying. Like everything about that movie continually is scary, no matter how many times I watch it. And I truly love Sinister, so I was really excited to see Sinister 2. I didn't get to the theater to see it. It didn't play very long around here.
It was in and out.
So, you know, I was kind of bummed out because you didn't hear a lot about it. So I was, you know, kind of anxious to see it, but not really because I didn't, you know, I wanted to follow up, you know, being as good as the first one. And I really liked how they carried this a story with the small role of the detective that's in the first one. He's the lead in this one. I thought that was kind of cool.
However, Deputy So-and-So?
Yeah, Deputy So-and-So. Nice one.
That's how he's credited.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
So, but he's, you know, he does a really great job. The film, I don't know, it lacks, it does what the first one did over again, but weaker.
Which is crazy because I think, like, you know, Scott Derrickson and C. Robert Cargill, like, they're, you know, very movie savvy. And I'm wondering if they just had to punch this out under
that's what
contractual
it feels
obligation.
Like. It feels like they wrote this, you know, within a week or two. Yeah. And
hey, they had Doctor Strange to move on to. So
put some Band-Aids on it, wrap it up, and throw it out there. It does have some really great moments. I wanted them to expand the universe of this, you know, Mr. Boogeyman. Mr. Boogie, whatever they call him. And they do.
Bagul.
Yeah. Well, they call him Mr. Boogie, right? Or
yeah.
Like that. So, yeah, we actually get too much of Bagul. That's the problem. It makes him not scary. So when he shows up, it's like, oh, that's a character in the movie rather than kind of like this haunting figure.
See, I thought the first Sinister was scary up till the end. In the end, I just.
Well, that's what they do is with the end of Sinister, kind of the whole movie of part two is like that.
Mm.
Like, we actually get to know and see how the films are actually made.
Okay.
And it's solely based around ghost children and them moving on to the next house.
Hmm.
They do expand a little bit on the universe with it, which I'm not going to go into detail because that would obviously spoil some people for things and people haven't seen it. However, they spend way too much time kind of rehashing the first one. They talk way too much about the original film, what happened, the characters that were in it. And to the point where we're watching the first movie over again, it's just not as scary.
Gotcha.
Especially like the tapes, the reels that we watch of the murders. There's all new reels for the murders. However, man, they just don't do it. They're very bland, you know, they're not scary. They're not shocking. There's only one. It's probably almost as effective as the lawnmower sequence. It's really, really good. However, it just lacks that power. Have you seen it, BJ?
Which one?
The alligator.
Yep. Yeah, that's the one that got me, too. Yeah. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I watched the alligator. I was like, holy fuck, man. That's fucking terrifying. However, like, most of them are just really bland and just not really – they're not good. So I was, you know, Shannon Sossaman does a great job. Deputy So-and-So does a great job. I like the abusive husband aspect, like that. They played that really, really well, I thought. However, you know,
my biggest problem with it was, I don't think that the child actors were all that great. I think that they focused a little too heavy on, like, you guys need to be spooky kids and not you need to be good actors. And that was it just took me out immediately.
Yeah, well, the one thing I didn't like about it is that we are already embedded to loving the one kid and hating the other one.
Yeah. Like,
that should be something that evolves or devolves in a way. However, we're like, man, I want this one kid to fucking get ran over by the lawnmower in the first movie. You know, you really fucking hate him. However, you know, I enjoyed the film. I thought it was, you know, it's a fun follow-up. You know, it's not bad by any means. I just was probably expecting more because of what the first one created and did.
Yeah.
And last but not least, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, because I know that when I initially saw Sinister 2, I saw it in theaters, and I actually really enjoyed the film, but it's only been, like, I rewatched it recently, and I disliked it more, like, upon rewatching it. I was just like, oh, man. So I think that is a film that when I saw it in the theater, and just being kind of immersed in, like, the sound design and all of that, that really definitely changed my opinion on it versus, like, seeing it at home. I think that's just really, really, really kind of going to show how drastically the movie going experience is changing. Because, like, I want to say that when I reviewed it on, like, What's on Your Doorstep, I want to say that I, like, talked about how much I loved it, but, you know, upon revisiting it at home, like, I just really didn't enjoy it. So, I don't know.
I'm kind of curious of what my second view will be, because I'm definitely going to show it to some friends down the line, because I thought it was effective for what it wanted to be. I just wanted more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the visuals, I think, are still really effective. Like, a lot of the imagery in it, I think, is really, really powerful, which is not that easy to do, especially when working with kids. But it just doesn't pack quite as powerful of a punch as the first one. But I don't know.
And last but not least, I actually watched this tonight, right before the show, a couple hours before the show, and this movie took me by surprise. Have any of you ever seen, I don't know how to pronounce the first name, Sean, maybe you can help me out with it since you're so good at names. but it's, Sion Sono, like, Why Don't You Play in Hell and Cold Fish and Suicide, Club and all that. It's one of his movies. It's called Tokyo Tribe.
I've been wanting to see that.
Sion Sono, yeah. So, I miss this at Fantastic Fest. I'm not a big fan of kind of... I don't want to say this type of cinema because it makes me seem like an asshole. I passed up Why Don't You Play in Hell at Fantastic Fest, and I watched it when it was released by Drafthouse, and I really, really liked it. And then when I thought it was a Fantastic Fest, I skipped Tokyo Tribe because it was a 2-hour movie about our Korean, Japanese rap battles. And I was like, I don't speak Japanese. Why am I going to like a movie where they all rap and it's some fucking West Side Story? Biggest mistake I've ever made. I watched this tonight. Man, this movie is so much fucking fun. It is visually stunning. It has some of the best action sequences and fight scenes I've seen. It is over the top. It is silly. It's very charming. The lead characters in the film are outstanding. The one girl that plays Sunmi, she is fucking fantastic. She kicks so much ass in the film. It's just an all-around really, really well-made, batshit fucking crazy movie. Like, it is borderline stupid because it's literally a bunch of gangs that rap battle, but they fight at the same time. But there is kind of like this seriousness to it that works. So if you're into anything like this, or any Sion Sono's films, and you like Why Don't You Play in Hell, you'll adore this. And this isn't my type of thing either. I'm not really drawn to these types of this Japanese cinema, which is a different, like, they have different levels. You know, they have like the really gory, over the top stuff. They have, you know, the really weird films. They have the J horror. You know, they have just kind of your, you know, Yakuza movies. So it's very, not two films are the same in Japanese cinema. It's kind of all different. So when I say I'm not into this, what does that really mean? I don't know. It's just, sometimes when I look at a film, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy that. You know, however, I'm wrong, and I'll never doubt Sono again, because I really liked Why Don't You Play in Hell, and I adored Tokyo Tribe. So definitely watch it. Trust me, it's, once you start it, you're going to think, man, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, you don't know if it's a work of art and magic is happening, or it's just the dumbest fucking thing you've ever seen. But once you're about 20 minutes in, you're like, okay, this is actually brilliant. And we are going to watch rap battles unfold while we watch, like, badass kung fu. Like, it's really fucking cool. So definitely check it out.
Cool. Well, let's jump into our feature film, the film we're going to talk about, the main film we're talking about here. This kind of jumps, was actually kind of a happy accident, because we last minute chose to do this one, because the movies we wanted to watch, I wasn't going to have time to get to them. But then for our Stream Screams and our VHS segments, this movie actually ties in kind of nicely in a weird way to those. So the movie we're talking about today is called Last Shift. It's a 2014 horror film directed by Anthony DeBlasi.
Do we really have to do this now? I'm literally about to start my first shifts. Anybody in here?
You are the lucky rookie to work the very last shift in this mausoleum. All 911 calls have been rerouted to the new station, so it should be quiet.
Sanford Police Department.
Help me. I'm trapped. I think they might all be dead.
Dancing flight. I'll destroy your home. The ones that lie within your heart. The ones you pray for.
There's so much blood splashing around in there.
She fell to her knees and bowed to the king. That's what payment means.
It was destined. The king of hell.
It's available on streaming on Netflix. That's also Magnet released a Blu-ray with some special features thrown on there. So I watched this for the first time the other night. I'm unfamiliar with Anthony DeBlasi's work, previous work. This is the first movie that I've seen of his. Everything else I have not seen. But I'll throw this over to you guys first. BJ, what are your impressions of Anthony DeBlasi's Last Shift?
So I have a very strange feeling on Last Shift. I saw Last Shift on Netflix. It was just a random find. And I was not sure what to expect of it at all. I really, really enjoyed the performance of the lead actress. I think that she is incredibly talented. For those who don't know, the film is about a rookie cop who's working at a police station on, you know, a shift at the station on like the station's last night.
Yeah, they're like
close it down.
Yeah, they're
or, yeah, they're relocating up, like,
across town
or whatever. Yeah, so it's the last shift that's going to be going on at that station, and you know she's going to close out for the night, and then a bunch of weird shit starts happening. So that's pretty much the gist of it. Was not sure what to expect. But I really, really liked it. And I was kind of blown away by some of the visuals. Some of them, the practical visuals, I really, really liked. Yeah. I thought the cult aspect of it was fantastic. There's some moments that were genuinely unsettling to me. And I loved it. And then I saw Let Us Pray. And then I did not like Last Shift anymore. Because Let Us Pray is the same movie, but far superior.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I didn't have time to get to it, but I was going to watch Let Us Pray like the next night, and I didn't get to it, but it's still on my shelf waiting to be watched. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, I will be very interested to hear your thoughts after you see Let Us Pray, because that's what happened. I was like, man, I love Last Shift. This is great. And then I saw Let Us Pray, and I was like, man, I was like, I don't really like this anymore.
Wow.
It's good.
Okay. Because I had the kind of the same reaction to you. I mean, I really dug a lot of the aspects of Last Shift. I liked the strong, the actress. Let's see, is it Juliana Harkavy? Jessica, is it Jessica who's the trying to see your picture here.
Jessica's the main actress.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
I think she's pretty good in the role. Like she, you believe her as kind of a rookie cop. She handles it. It's
yeah, absolutely.
Movie.
She acts like somebody whose dad was a cop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's what I think I enjoyed the most about her.
Yeah. She does pretty great. Like you said, the prosthetic effects, by who are they by? I had it. Lee Grimes are pretty fantastic, and just the last 20 minutes, like,
yeah, it goes pretty apeshit.
I really dug it, but it drug in the middle, because there's a time when you're like, you're just kind of following her around this empty station, and weird shit's going on here and there, but it's just like, I don't know if it was the lighting or something like that. It just didn't, I was just getting really bored, and then I kept giving it a shot, waded through, got through all that, and then it got a little bit batshit, and it ended, and, you know, it was all right. If someone saw this on Netflix, you know, I'd say, yeah, give it a shot if you haven't, you know, if there's nothing else to watch.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely would recommend this to people. And, like, me seeing Let Us Pray doesn't mean that I would not recommend Last Shift. Like, I still enjoy the movie. I still think it's good. I just think Let Us Pray is far superior. And what was funny is that there's a moment in particular in Last Shift where, like, that's when it hooked me. And it was funny because Rob G on Killer POV was talking about the film, and he said the exact same thing. And it's a moment when another police officer shows up and is talking to her, and then he turns, and you see something on him. I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it. But, like, there's something on him that is not right. And you're like, oh shit. And that was the moment when I watched it that I was like, all right, yeah, I'm hooked. I'm in. Like, now you've got me. I forgive you for the last 25 minutes of nothing. You know,
right.
Cause that moment alone, it like there's moments in it that are very Sixth Sense to me, where you're, you know, like very similarly to, I guess it reminds me a lot of, like, the scenes when, you know, Haley Joel Osment's character is, like, talking to, like, the dead bicyclists who, you know, looks completely normal, and then, like, they turn left, and then, like, something's fucked up. Like, there's a lot of stuff like that in Last Shift that is really unsettling, and, like, that's the kind of stuff that scares me, is the stuff that looks normal but isn't. The sort of the illusion of things being okay, but knowing that they're not. Those are the moments that will always affect me. That's why, like, It Follows got to me so bad. And I think that's why I liked, upon the initial view, that's why I liked Last Shift so much. Great, was because
it's a great idea.
Absolutely. And I feel it's maybe, a great idea.
Maybe a better director would have kind of translated those nuances better. I don't know.
I don't know about that, because I like Anthony de Blasi's work. Okay. His other film, Casadaga, however you want to pronounce it. I really enjoy that one. I don't know if that one's still streaming on Netflix. It was for a while. That one's I really liked. I think that one made my top 10 when it came out. But that's kind of his style. He really hasn't made a movie yet that I didn't like.
Okay.
But yeah, this is very much in kind of his wheelhouse.
Okay.
Of how he makes his movies. I'm kind of excited to hear Brad talk about it. Yeah, I know
Brad,
that he hated
your thoughts on La Pentagram's Shift.
Oh, God.
It's the Pentagrams. Pentagrams, the A.
Well, one reason I want to preface is that a reason why I kind of wanted to talk about this is you mentioned it, and the movie's been out for a while, and I was like,
yeah.
You know, I don't want to talk about something that old, but however, this movie made a lot of top 10 horror ones.
Yeah, it's been gaining some traction for some reason.
And that intrigued me to talk about it because I honestly do not see why anybody really likes this movie.
Well, I think there's the idea of the film, definitely there are some unsettling moments, and it's an original premise.
No, it's not.
Well, yeah, it's an original horror. It's not a sequel. You know what I mean? But there's definitely some unsettling moments in it.
It takes the plot of, you know, Sodom Precinct 13, but instead of making it the Cholo with the gangs, it is a cult, which is kind of the same fucking thing. And
are you trying to say that cults and cholos are the same thing?
Well, no. The
cholos are just cults with bad eyebrows. Is that what you're trying to say?
Saying they call it the cholo.
I know. I'm making a terrible joke.
Fuck with me. Don't fuck with me. And uses this kind of like Manson-esque character to, you know, kind of dive into this cult. And yes, I do agree that the first 15 minutes of the film are entertaining because you're with her. It's that isolation feeling. You know, she's, you know, getting spooked because anybody would be spooked. However, it goes on for a little too long. But once the flashlight sequence happens and when she's in total darkness, that's when the movie loses me completely.
Really?
Yeah, that's to the point where I was like, you know what? Do I have something else to do? No, I don't. But I'll finish the Senate. And just from there on, it just kept like going down. Like it played every fucking like other movie in the book was in this movie. It's just a mashup of other movies. Like you said with the cop, the sequence that you didn't want to give away. It's the fucking Sixth Sense when he's like, hey, come here. Let me show you where my dad keeps his gun. That's what that's from.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, and it's like, it's one of those things where, okay, you know, you obviously like all these movies, but like, it's like Condemned. Do something different. Show me something else. I saw Let Us Pray at Fantastic Fest. And then I saw this and like, how many police officer movies that we have to fucking see nowadays where they're fucking trapped and it's like one police officer left. And I don't actually think Let Us Pray is that great of a movie, but it's more stylistic. It has a better soundtrack. It looks better. Last Shift just looks cheap. And it is the same fucking camera that fucking Eli Roth probably films on.
Here's the weird thing though. I don't think that Last Shift looks cheap. I just think that the shots that they have and the effects that they have that are not like prosthetic make everything look so fucking awful. It's like when you have the not prosthetic, practical. God, I can speak English, I swear. like the practical effects that they have in there are so effective, but then it'll be immediately followed up by something that is so littered with bad CGI that it's a lot like the Poltergeist remake, where the stuff that's good is like really, really well done, and then they immediately give you that bullshit tree and you're like, ah, no.
Like, hey, my 3-year old was pretty scared of that tree, I gotta say.
3-year-old.
The only like effect in the film that actually is great is ruined by the cover, because you're expecting to see that goddamn face somewhere, and when it shows up, you're like, oh, that's the cover of the movie. Oh, wait, I'm actually supposed to be scared or taken back by this sequence, but does it look as good as the cover? No, it doesn't.
And that's the photographs got me.
That's what is through the whole fucking movie. And I'm not saying that it looks cheap, the special effects. I'm saying that all of DeBals, whatever his name is, all his movies, that Casadega, oh my god, how fucking, I'm sorry, BJ, but that movie is just dreadfully slow and just like total, like, I don't know, we talked about soap opera earlier. It's like Kill Game. You know, it's just you have this kind of like neat little story, but you have just so much drama poured on.
You forget that I live for melodrama.
I know. Okay, that's fine. But I'm just saying, like, that kind of, like, make up your mind. You're either a horror film or you're a drama. If you're a horror film, put your specks of drama in there and play it well. If you're going to be a drama, put your specks of horror in there and play that well.
But why can't you have both? Like, we have genre mashups all the time. So why can't you have a melodramatic horror film?
Maybe you find good actors to sell that drama, right? Is that what you're saying, Brad?
Want to have a melodramatic horror film? Then make it It Follows, that plays both sides perfectly.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, you have, we're getting off topic because Last Shift isn't a drama at all. I was more or less talking about...
No, it's not. It's not.
But Dredd does the same thing. His other film that he did for, like, 8 films to die for.
Yes. See, I love Dredd. I fucking love Dredd. And I will... Because Dredd is fucking Carl mean.
That's the Dredd I like. See, you thought it was mean. I was laughing the whole time everything was happening.
Dredd is mean. It is mean. And that's why I love that movie. I don't know. I don't know. Because I hate pulling the card. But, like, maybe it's because I've been on my goddamn deathbed. But when I watch the scene in Dredd where the kid is talking about, like, losing his hearing again, and, like, that being the thing he's most scared of, and then he fucking makes the kid think he's going to go deaf again. Like, I almost throw up every single time I see that scene. Because all I think about is, like, what that would feel like if somebody, as a joke, told me I had cancer again. Like, I would fucking kill myself. Like, that movie is so goddamn mean. And I don't know. I think that it's just probably just personal experience. So... it is what it is. I love that movie. But that's neither here nor there. We're talking about Last Shift and cults, and we're getting into the filmography of a director.
Is that they play the cult aspect, which I'm a sucker, and I'm super biased when it comes to cult movies. You throw cults in movies, the majority of the time, I'm going to dig it. And that's what I went into Last Shift wanting to think it was going to be the best movie in the world, because I knew it had to deal with cults.
Well, you're setting yourself up for failure.
No, I usually don't. I love Paranormal Activity 3 because there's a fucking cult in it. I love Martha May Marlene.
See, but that movie's awesome.
I love Sound of My Voice. You know, I love Kill List. Mm-hmm. You know, those, because the cult aspect has to be the scary part. They play the cult aspect too much how the Mansons worked. Or Manson. They play the devil card. They overplay it and oversell it to the point where they keep talking about it and they keep doing the spooky imagery. and it just kind of, why don't you just fucking sit down and just tell her what you're going to do is a lot scarier than fucking flickering lights and, you know, whatever the fuck they were doing with the motion.
Like, yeah, that's the whole Saw thing. Like, that all started with, like, movies like Saw and shit like that.
I don't know. It just takes me out of the movie.
Twitchy cam.
Yeah.
I know I'm in the minority on this movie because a lot of people love it. It's just that I really don't understand why. Like, because it feels like a by-the-numbers horror film. It feels like pretty much I get fucking DVDs in the mail all the time and nothing really sticks out there too much. I don't even mention the shit on the show because I just feel bad. And this is one of those movies that just goes into that pile. Like, it's just completely by the numbers, doesn't do anything new or creative or different. It's just all right there, right in front of you the whole entire time. And that's why I really don't understand why people love the movie. I don't think it's a terrible movie by any means. It's just there. Like, the movie's just there.
Well, I think there's kind of a push for people at least pushing, you know, non-sequels and quote-unquote original horror. So I think that's part of it.
But nothing.
And then also, I mean, there's some derivative moments, but I mean, and it's readily available on Netflix, so something that people can recommend.
Big thing with it is that, so you may not understand it, but like, so Sean and I both, you know, experience, you know, there are moments that were really unsettling for us. So not only is it a film that we admit, hey, there are some moments in it that are unsettling, but it had kind of the taking of Deborah Logan effect where people really didn't hear about it. And then boom, here is this movie on Netflix that you can watch that you didn't even know fucking existed. I'm not saying that it's as good as Taking Deborah Logan. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that it had kind of that same drop out of the sky impact where now there's this movie that you've never heard of that's creeping people out that all of your friends are talking about that everyone can experience together. So everyone's going into it on the same level. Like, it isn't something that like hit a bunch of festivals that you've been hearing about or like people have been reviewing for months and now you're finally getting around to it. Like, everyone's going into it on the same level, critics and fans alike.
I mean, you know, 2-3 years from now, are we gonna be talking about Last Shift? Nah, hell no. No, we're not, you know. But is it something right now that people are discovering around the same time? Because there is that like festival, everyone just gets just tired of hearing about it. Like Babadook, that happened to Babadook, where it got a lot of great reviews. Once it was readily available, people are shitting on it. Oh, that's it. You know, same with It Follows and, you know, Why Are We Still Here? Or We Are Still Here.
That's people's own problems because they have this hype. Stop fucking, like, yeah, they promote the movie because, you know, I'm a culprit of that too. Like, we fucking love the movie. We talk about it because the more you talk about it, the more people listen, the more people are going to check it out when it hits.
Yeah.
But then, like, I mean, obviously there are some people that are like, this is the best movie ever made. And yeah, that kind of gets, you know, really boring. And I understand, like, it has, like, Taking a Deborah Logan, you know, where it just kind of comes out of nowhere. People discover it themselves. But, you know, it's just like Taking a Deborah Logan is extremely well made and really terrifying at times. I just didn't get that with this. And maybe that's the reason why. It's because certain people were scared from it, obviously. And it made a lot of top 10 lists. People thought this movie was scary. However, I thought it was just dreadfully boring.
I think but I do think that because no one really knew anything about it, that does also greatly influence how a lot of people are responding to it. Because they're going in with we now live in a world where it's next to impossible to know absolutely nothing about a film.
Yeah.
I mean, if even if you haven't read a review, you've, you know, seen a poster or seen like a Deadline fucking post about it or a trailer or something. But if you've seen or heard absolutely nothing, like, then it brings out that kind of sense of nostalgia of being, you know, fucking 9 years old at the video store and picking something based on the box art alone and watching it. And even if it's shitty, you like it. Like, we all did that when we were kids, and there are so many movies that we love that we probably go back and watch now, and we're like, this is garbage, but we have these fond memories of, like, oh, I picked this on the cover art alone, and that's what we did with this movie, is that we went on Netflix, and we had never heard of this movie, but we saw that cover art of that dude's face with a pentagram carved in it, and we went, holy shit, what is that? Yeah. I gotta watch it. And then we watched it, and we were like, oh, this is so cool. We love it. But we're gonna revisit it in 3 weeks and go, what the fuck were we all thinking?
Yeah.
Brad, maybe you're just a little smarter than the rest of us. What do I know?
I will agree with you on, you know, to go kind of off topic for a second, there is that mentality of, something that you said, Sean, is that people discover it on by themselves. No one's telling them to do it, because it's one of those things that I've been at festivals, and bloggers and critics are guilty of this. And I actually tweeted this the other day. I said, as soon as a movie plays at a festival, everybody comes out and is like, this happened with It Follows. People come out of there, their faces glowing. They're like, holy shit. Oh my God. This is like if Carpenter made a movie when he was like, you know, 19 years old. It's so fucking good. The soundtrack, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, after the festival's over and everybody's talking about their top 10, then half those people change and they're like, oh, that movie was okay at, you know, the slightest. It was just okay. And then by the time it's released and then the general public sees it and they're like, oh, man, that movie's really cool. That same person is like, I don't understand how the fuck anybody likes this movie. Because we're in a world where people want to have that, where they discover it on their own. And once other people start liking it, then they're like, they start shitting on it for some weird reason. And yeah, I'm calling some people out on that. And that is kind of, you know, gut punching in a way. However, that's how it is. So maybe in that aspect, I can understand why people because would like The Last Shift, because this is a festival movie, it feels like. This looks and feels like it would play well. It'd be a safe choice for festivals. Mm-hmm. And it never went there. It just ended up on Netflix and like the Taking of Deborah Logan. We hate found footage, but everybody likes Taking of Deborah Logan. You know, Last Shift pops up. Everybody seems to like it. Which I think that the exclusivity is maybe affecting films these days, and seeing it first before anybody else, people are getting jealous. So therefore now the movie has to live up to something, because hey, I've heard about this movie for a year.
Oh yeah, sometimes 2 years.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, it's awesome for festivals to, you know, have movies out there, but sometimes it does take too long. But honestly, I think it's putting this thing in people's heads, like people need to come, like it's not the festival's fault or the people there. It's that people are taking hype personally, and now they're feeling it's a waste of their time when they watch a movie. And that's kind of getting to me. It's like, why do you listen to so much hype? Somebody likes the movie. You go in with it just thinking to yourself, did I like this movie? Didn't I? Not like, I don't understand why people like this movie. That's not the thought to have after you watch something. You know, I'm not watching Last Shift and be like, oh, why do people like this? No, I was curious why I was on a people's lot of top 10 lists. But after having this conversation, I kind of see why.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think it's top 10 list worthy at all. But as far as, you know, a decent fright flick, like, yeah, I'm it's fine. It's fine with me. It's a one time
honorable
too.
Mention.
Like, I'll never.
Like, yeah.
I fully admit that it made my honorable mentions list because, cool. Like, I did enjoy it. I really did. But, like, Let Us Pray also made my honorable mention list. and that's the other thing, too, that's, like, so crazy to me is that those, like, both of those movies both came out like right around the same time.
In the same month or something like that.
Yeah, and they're so similar. And it's like but it's such like a weirdly specific thing to focus on, is like a female rookie cop on like her first night at, you know, kind of the worst, you know, patrol station in town, and weird stuff happens. Like, that's such a weirdly specific subgenre, and two films came out the same time with leads that are like very similar in appearance.
Did this play
like, that's
at
weird.
Any festivals?
I don't think so, because yeah. No one was really like, when it came out, no one was like, oh yeah, I saw that back at a fest. Because usually when something like that happens, that's the first thing that some dipshit yeah. wants to start bragging about.
I liked that movie that way before you did.
Exactly, and I didn't see that anywhere. So I don't think that it did. I think that it just kind of popped out of nowhere.
The only place it played was it played at Fright Fest in 2014 in October, okay. And then finally released in October of last year in 2015. Wow. So, yeah, I mean, and it played in Let Us Pray, played, I think, premiered at Fantastic Fest in September. So, yeah, the movies were made at the exact same time.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. So
it's like, I got to watch Let Us Pray.
You should. Pollyanna McIntosh is in it. And then what's his nuts from Game of Thrones.
Cool.
Yeah. Can't
believe said, I was going to really try good. To get these because I figured these would be a good, fun double feature. But I didn't get to the second one.
Yeah. But,
cool. I think we've said our piece about Last Shift. When I first saw it, like when I saw the cover and I immediately like texted somebody, I was like, what is this? You know, I put out the call, like, what is this?
It's a hell of a good cover.
That cover.
It's
you know?
A great cover. Yeah.
So,
it intrigued me.
Yeah. Well, based on this conversation, if you guys want to check it out, it's on Netflix.
Let us know what you think. Cause I mean, yeah. I know I'm in the minority of that one because I literally no, haven't.
I don't think you're in the minority.
No, I haven't heard anybody shit on it.
Really?
Haven't heard anybody say they didn't like.
I've seen kind of middling reviews about it, but
because everybody on Killer POV liked it, right?
Yeah,
yeah, they all liked it.
Hmm. Yeah, I thought I didn't remember them saying anything bad.
Well, I think like. You know, Anthony DeBlasi, like, he has a few films under his belt. He's another one, I believe, coming out soon. Who knows with these kind of independent horror flicks, like, when we'll actually see it.
Oh, he's always working with his wife. His wife is starting to do
okay. Film. His newest film is going to be Most Likely to Die, but I don't know. I don't see a release date on that. But, I don't know. I mean, there's a little 10-minute kind of, you know, little piece on the... on the Blu-ray that has them talking about the movie, and you can tell he's a passionate filmmaker. He's not just trying to, you know, paint by numbers or anything like that. He's generally like a genre fan. So, you know, he's on my radar, at least to give his next film a shot, at least. So,
yeah, well, I've given every film, I will give his next one a shot too. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, stop watching his movies. Just say he really, you know, obviously he's making movies that people like because he keeps making them. They're not doing anything for me yet. I guess because it's just they're too familiar.
Yeah. Well, you've seen a shit ton of movies, so I can see
how that can happen. Condemned. You know, Condemned's not a bad movie, but, you know, I imagine a lot of people will like it when they see it. It's just, I don't know. Like, sometimes you can do the same thing over again, and it's still – and if it's done well, I don't mind. But it just feels like these things are slapped together because – you know, it's, you know, movie lovers making movies for movie lovers. And sometimes that always doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's like Harry Potter. Harry Potter is nothing but a giant mashup of every fantasy fan, like fan service that you can think of. It's just intertwined into one giant story. That's all it is.
And therefore it's amazing.
Exactly. That's one of the things I did over break. I rewatched it and I was like, oh, so this is, you know, Clash of the Titans. Oh, this is 1,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Oh, this is Temple of Doom. Oh, this is... God damn it, J.K. Rowling, you're a genius. Anyway.
All right. I don't want to get into a Harry Potter rabbit trail because I have things I can say. We rewatched those within the past couple years with my family. And
they're the best.
All right, moving along here. Our next... two movies in this next two segments actually have a lot, kind of have some things in common with The Last Shift as far as, you know, one person knows shit, is seeing shit, are they crazy?
Yeah. Yeah, I think all three of these films, yeah. For Stream Screams and VHS. Oh my God!
let's go ahead.
Oh my God, I can't remember.
Let's go ahead and jump into Stream Screams.
Nate, wake up!
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
Don't fucking scream at me!
Scream, I'll break your neck. Don't scream, miss. Don't scream.
Today we are talking about a 1984 film called Scream for Help.
Alone and afraid. Was it her imagination? Or was it real?
He also fixed that fuse box in the basement. It killed that man, but it was meant to kill you.
Sweetie, calm down. You're hysterical.
Give it to me. Give me that picture!
We wouldn't have left the car if we hadn't been running for our lives. Paul Fox was chasing us. Don't you believe me?
Hi.
I'm upset because my stepfather just tried to murder my mother.
No shit.
Next time you hear me coming, it's to kill you.
You're accusing the man I married of trying to murder me.
He fixed this car so it'd kill Mom.
You almost killed both of us because of your lousy driving, and now you want to blame it on your stepfather?
Christy knew their secrets, but nobody believed her until it was too late to scream for help.
Brad, of course, is the mastermind behind these segments here, and he's the one programming these segments. This is directed by Michael Winner.
Michael Winner, yes!
Okay. And
filmmaker, just saying that.
I mean, Michael Winner is a freaking badass.
Yeah.
So, you know,
you have Sentinel, to have a name like Michael Winner.
Death Wish.
Yeah. I mean, the Sentinel is like his shit. But yeah, the Death Wish movies, I mean, what the fuck out? This guy is like, what, directed like the Bible? You know, that was a joke. but yeah.
Wasn't a good one.
The Mechanic.
Firepower, which has God, who's in Lee Marvin? Is Lee Marvin? Is it the one I'm thinking about? But anyways, he makes some badass action movies, and you know, Tom Holland of all people wrote this script.
Yeah, what the hell?
Which I don't know. After I've watched it twice in the past like couple weeks, and then I watched it again, thinking, oh, this is such a Tom Holland script. However, this movie cracks me up because you want to talk about a genre mashup.
Yeah.
Like, it's not really, I think genre mashup might be maybe not the right thing to say, but this movie starts off such kind of a prancy dancy, like teen, you know, oh my God, my stepfather is trying to kill me and my mother, voice over talking about it, and turns out to be some batshit fucking crazy, like, you know, Last House on the Left type ending.
Yeah.
Like, it gets really fucking crazy.
I wrote down that Scream for Help is like an after school special from the 80s, a 1980s after school special with just random R-rated sex thrown in.
And some that is exactly how I was going to describe it, is that it's like an R-rated after-school special.
Absolutely ridiculous, especially when she sees her stepfather and the other chick in the hotel. Like, I was kind of shocked at the graphicness of that scene.
Yeah, like, it comes out of nowhere. Like, when the woman, like, you know, it was so funny because I made this joke to you earlier, that lead character, because I'm just going to say that Christy says everybody's first and last name in the movie when she speaks about him. She like says Paul Fox is, you know, fucking Brenda Bull, you know. She just keep and the scene between her stepfather and Brenda when she's getting nailed doggy style.
Oh my god!
I was like, what?
I was just shocked at the how far.
And then her losing her virginity, I was like, I was watching that again. I was like, man, this is a little uncomfortable. You know? Yeah. She starts complaining that it hurts and like starts to tear up, and I'm like, aw. I just feel bad now. And like this is like really graphic because obviously, you know, you're underage and you know, you're having sex with Josh Dealey. I'm gonna totally talk with people first and last names because that rocks. So but yeah,
it does rock, Brad Henderson.
I can totally see the after school special because it really starts off like that.
Well, I wonder if he had like two scripts or he had this after school special written. It was denied.
This is what Tom Holland does. Tom Holland has like, you know, BJ, you have to like this because this is melodramatic. This is like,
oh, I loved it. Yeah, I loved every second of it. It's a freaking hot mess, you know, and I love it.
You know, it's one of those things, like, this film doesn't, like, it finally picks up and knows how to balance the two, you know.
Cause it juggles for a bit.
One thing I want to talk about, we want to talk about juggling genres, is I think Fright Night does that perfectly.
It sure does.
It handles the drama side, and it handles the horror side just perfectly. I mean, it has a little bit more horror, but when it interjects the drama, it's not that bad. You know, it's really well done. It doesn't steer away from the horror aspect. And this one, it doesn't know what it wants to be at first. And then it turns out, because the movie is kind of really mean and ultra violent at times for being, you know, what you're shown in the beginning. And then, like, he's pushing the fucking, he pushes the wheelchair. Like, he was like, every time I kissed you, I almost wanted to vomit. And like throws her down the steps in the wheelchair. It's like, god damn, like, you mean motherfucker.
Yeah, it gets crazy. And then there's a car accident. We don't want to spoil anything, but there is a car accident.
The car accident.
That's just ridiculously brutal.
Her falling down the stairs.
Are you
going to
call it an accident?
Oh, I don't know. Is it?
Ooh.
So the basic premise of this film is that we are thrown in the middle of a teenage girl who believes that her stepfather is trying to kill her mother and her, yes. And she is trying to prove it. So it is one of those things where the kid, you know, well, this one's kind of, she just suspects, but we're kind of thrown into the middle of it once the movie starts. So it is kind of jarring because you don't know where it's going. The soundtrack is very, very weird.
Yeah, what is up with it? Like, that's what, like, got me thinking TV. It's like TV soundtrack.
It's not a horror film soundtrack. It's like strings and like orchestra stuff, and you just like,
it's just random.
It doesn't fit whatsoever. And you have this voice.
It reminded me of the TV soundtrack for the TV show of the Babysitter's Club.
Yes.
Which is so, makes it even more uncomfortable.
But yeah, it's just like you have that weird soundtrack. You have this awful voiceover of the teenage girl. You're thrown in the middle of her life, which this has obviously been going on for a certain period of time. But once actually I think it's the car accident that the movie turns.
Yeah. That, when that happened, I was like, holy shit.
She gets hit by that car.
What?
I was like, what the fuck? Like, that is awesome. It's like, it comes out of nowhere. And then the movie takes this different route and just becomes very mean and violent. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, man, those stunt people really went all out on some of those falls and shit. Like, you know, and it kind of gets – I think it's very suspenseful. Towards the end of the film, when it becomes kind of a home invasion thing. And I think the movie carries itself just fine. It's just, it's a little jarring at first. It takes a while to actually get to where it wants to go.
It's one of those where you really need to have patience. And this is seeing this movie is one of the reasons why I try to never, ever walk out of a film or turn the film off. I always, at least, even if it takes me a couple of days, at least I'm going to get through the film and watch it for what it is, because I could have easily just given up on this film within the first 20 minutes, easily within the first 30 minutes. But once it takes a turn,
it's
and
very easy to give up.
It
on
gets game. Even if it's not that great, it gets really, really entertaining. And I think that it's this, and even Last Shift, and the next movie we're going to talk about. It's kind of, you know, if you're willing to not just give up on a film and get through it, I think you'll be rewarded. You know, whether or not the whole film's great, that's to be debated. But at least give a film a chance. And if it ends and you hate it, you hated the movie. That's fine. But I think if you give up on a film too early, you could miss out on some gold, which, oh my gosh, there's some gold in this film.
That's the one thing with Tom Holland and his in his scripts is that when he like he really knows how to churn it out, like stuff like with Class of 1984. You know, Psycho 2 is an amazing sequel to, you know, such a historic horror film. Did a really good job with that. The batshit craziness, like The Beast Within, like that's a whole nother level of weird.
I need to watch that still.
Oh, Beast Within is really good. It's very, very
It's awesome. A fucking classic.
Yeah, and, you know, just like with Fright Night and... It's the one. This is one script where, you know, I wonder how much input Michael Winner had in the beginning because at about the 20-minute mark, it feels like a Tom Holland movie, but the first 20 minutes doesn't feel like Tom Holland at all because Tom Holland, you know, even though he's a goofy guy, he really knows how to churn in that kind of, you know, really hardcore suspense. And kind of being uncomfortable, and you know he's a good writer. I mean, obviously these directors had some input too, but I mean Mark Lester directed 1984. He's not that amazing of a director, other than you know Class of 1999, of course. But you know, had to get that in there somewhere.
Of course.
You know, Snow Raiders of Atlantis. However, you know, the sequence when fucking Roddy McDowell pulls the gun on the class in 1984,
oh, yeah.
It's fucking terrifying, you know, and that's what Tom Holland is really, really good at. He's good at, really, really good at, I don't know anymore, but he was really good at scaring people. And I think once about 20 minutes, it becomes a Tom Holland movie. Because it is suspenseful, it is, you know, it's not really scary, but I think it really gets suspenseful, like, the last 20 minutes. And, you know, it's just some crazy shit happens in that house. And that fucking explosion is awesome. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, the practical shit about the film, the stunts, the, you know, that kind of stuff, everything's perfect from then on out once the movie starts going. You know, but I completely miss the kind of what you said, the after school special. Like, it totally is. It's like, you know, one of those, like, it's almost like a Goosebumps, like, you know, a Goosebumps book made into a movie where, oh, my stepdad is trying to kill me. Not like the stepfather shit where it's like, you know, what's his name? Terry. I always forget his name. But where he's like menacing and you're scared of him, like this is kind of like la di da di da Candyland.
Yeah, this guy's not menacing at all.
Yeah, and then it just gets, you know, even what he says, like the most frightening thing he says is every time I kissed you, I wanted to throw up. That line just gets, that makes me giggle.
Oh, it's hilarious.
It's
available on Vudu. It's standard definition. Doesn't look that great, but
no,
it's
But this movie's. I don't think this movie's available on DVD at all.
I think I'm not sure, but it's you can rent it for like $3. And
it is also on YouTube in its entirety. Oh, if you're an asshole.
Okay.
Wow.
At least pay the $3. Is what
at least pay the $3.
Like I said, if you're an asshole.
YouTube's reserved for stuff that's not available anywhere. That's the necessary evil. But yes.
Yeah, Scream for Help is not available on DVD. It is available on VHS for $20. So there you go.
Pay $2.99, rent the thing. You can buy it for $9.99. I'm not on the fence to buy it, but I'm glad that I've seen it. That's where I'm at on it. It was fun. It was a fun time.
I bought it.
Cool. Well, let's jump into this next segment here. Because there is definitely some similarities again with this next one. Let's talk, we're jumping into VHS. Oh my God.
The key.
Well, here we are at last. Right where we ought to be. Video.
Oh my God!
All right, so this is a film, 1988, Deadly Dreams.
Beyond the veil of sleep. Somewhere between truth and deception lies the world of dreams. For Alex Tormey, it is a world of deadly dreams.
Alex?
It was just a dream!
I keep dreaming about this hunter. Then I wake up and I see him.
What if he kills me before I wake up? It says in the books that if you die in your dreams, you really die. You never wake up.
I know it sounds crazy, but I just don't know what's real anymore.
You get too stressed out, man.
You like games, don't you? This one's called hide and seek. You run and hide, and I try to find you. Run, boy.
Haunted by treacherous delusions, trapped in a web of inescapable horror. Now, when the nightmare ends,
Maggie!
The terror begins. Deadly Dreams.
Everybody knows this cover.
I've seen the cover for sure in the video store.
As a kid, I didn't rent this, and I had no idea what the fuck it was. Like, I remember walking by countless times looking at this cover, and, you know, before my mom was letting me rent what I wanted, you know, she would usually rent the movies and then I would watch them. However, you know, there was a few things that I kept seeing the covers of, and I knew my mom would never rent, like, you know, The Boneyard or, you know, Blood Farm. God, what is the fucking name? But anyways, what is the name of that fucking movie? It has, like, the guy on the front. He's got, like, an eyeball. God damn it. But anyways, you know, it's just – it's one of those, like, really, like, eerie covers because you kind of – you looking at that, you don't know that's a fox mask.
Right.
It just – it looks like some kind of fucking demon.
Yeah.
And it terrified me. And then finally I got around to watching it. And it's a fox mask.
This is a wolf.
Yes, is a wolf. Sorry. Yeah, it is. I think it is a wolf.
I almost gave up on this one. Okay.
And you're lucky.
Very close.
How do you give up? Because the beginning of the movie when Alex's like family is murdered.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, that happens. So
it's very unsettling.
So basically,
it's
like when he witnesses his family get murdered by a guy in a fox mask, and that comes back to haunt him, and he has a lot of nightmares about it. And it's like these nightmares just keep happening. You don't know what's real or what's not, and I think I just kind of like stopped giving a shit. And then I shut it off for the night. I went to bed. I slept on it. And then the next night I resumed, and from there on out, it just got more and more just batshit crazy with the twists and turns that it takes. Because it turns into kind of a mystery thriller, kind of whodunit. And I was actually surprised with a lot of the little twists and turns. And it just made me laugh. Because this guy, this main actor, Mitchell Anderson, who plays Alex, he's all about showing off his pecs.
Yeah, he like... I don't think he has a shirt through the movie.
did we mention what the title of this was?
Did I? Deadly Dreams.
I don't think so. I think we just started talking about it.
So it's called Deadly Dreams, people.
Yeah, we're talking about a movie called Deadly Dreams, directed by a lady, by the way.
That's why he's shirtless.
Yeah, well, you know, directed by the lady that did Body Chemistry. So that's a one thing with Mark Singer, and he never has a shirt on in it.
Christine Peterson.
She also did a Critters 3, right?
Yep. Yeah, one of the Critters movies. Yeah, I forget which one.
I think it's Critters 3.
Critters 3.
Because I know my lady directors.
Yeah. So.
This is her, also,
what?
This is her first film.
Oh, really? That's cool.
But,
She's done some other stuff. I know that she worked a lot on, like, she was assistant director on a lot of movies, if I remember correctly. Yeah. But
she's involved with Tremors.
She definitely worked on, she was working on one of the studios that did stuff for Apocalypse Now. I don't know if it was, like, the effects studio or, like, the post-production studio, but she worked on it. So...
Yeah, I know
clearly she knows her shit.
I know she worked on some bigger movies.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to mention, I can't remember if I mentioned, you know, how we had our, you know, we picked like one dude and we picked girls. What episode was that? We picked like our ladies that like.
Yeah.
Was Juliet Cummings on that list? Because I thought she was.
With a name like that, she had to be on your list.
Yeah, well, anyways, she's always on my... I'm pretty sure she's on that list that we talk about. But anyways, she's in this movie. And that's kind of the one reason why I picked it, just so we can talk about her a little bit. So Julia Cummings is, like, one of my favorite ladies in the world. And, you know, she's in Psycho 3, which we just talked about Psycho 2. She's in Friday the 13th. She's in Slumber Party Massacre 2, which is, like, one of my favorite sequels of all time.
And it's she's so good.
Oh, and she's also in the Eric Stoltz movie Running Hot. She plays Jenny.
Oh yeah.
So
well, she's hot to trot in this for sure.
She is so fucking cute. And she gets naked.
Yes. That's all I really remember about this film. Is shirtless,
let's talk more about Deadly Dreams.
Shirtless Mitchell Anderson and shirtless Juliet Cummings.
A lot of shirtless people.
Yep.
No shirts.
And the
whole movie just no shirts. Do you think that Patrick Bryce saw this movie before he made Creep?
Huh.
Because that's what I kept thinking about with, like, the wolf mask. Like, that's what I just kept thinking about was Creep and, like, the werewolf mask. And I was like, you know, this makes me think of Deadly Dreams.
I don't know. I think the wolf hunter mask is, you know, I don't know.
Because that's not something that you see very often, like animal in particular. Like I've seen plenty of
films. Yeah, Creep is a werewolf. Like Deadly Dreams is like a straight up like skin of a wolf head. It's like the straight up like.
Yeah, it's.
I think it's pretty effective though too. I think
it's a weird mask to actually have.
Yeah, that's what it is because it's an uncomfortable looking wolf, which is like the Patrick like the Creep werewolf mask doesn't look like uncomfortable werewolf mask to me, and the Deadly Dreams mask looks like an uncomfortable wolf mask to me. It doesn't look like a Halloween mask. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, other movies, it's like, yeah, I've seen 10 million fucking pig masks. They all look the same. But, like, both of these masks are just, like, there's just something off about them. And then it just, they're, not only are they scary, they make me feel unsettled. I don't know.
I think it's a ballsy move, you know, because, obviously it didn't work because the movie didn't really go anywhere. It didn't make any money. It's not available.
Well, I don't think it's the wolf mask's fault.
No. I'm just saying. But, you know, I think it's one of those things where you know, this is like what, 19, like it probably 88. 88?
It was released in 88.
Oh, shit. So anyways, you know, being released around the time frame of kind of slashers and mass killers, you know, trying to be creative, that worked. You know, they were definitely creative. It's a very odd mask. You don't see it hardly ever. It's just a shame that the movie didn't really go anywhere, which I don't understand because the movie has some really cool horror aspects. The violence is, you know, well done. It does that borderline, you know, your suspicions and kind of, you know, his grounded to reality, you know, where it's kind of him just kind of going crazy.
Yeah.
Suffering such a traumatic, you know, thing in his life, very similar to, you know, kind of like, you know, maybe Silent Night, Deadly Night, where he watches his parents get slaughtered in front of him, and then, you know, he becomes, you know, what killed his parents. And with this, you kind of got, you get to see kind of the borderline psychological aspect. So it's like one step forward, kind of in the slasher genre, I think, because it once it, you know, it has that slasher elements, but it also, you know, you have a fucking hunter going around a fucking fox max with a shotgun.
Yeah.
You know, and I think shotguns are a lot scarier than knives.
I wonder.
Oh, they're way scarier.
Yeah.
So
I don't know why this movie didn't click. I mean, it definitely is totally, it clicked with me because it was just goofy. But then, like, the last, you know, 15-20 minutes, it actually got interesting. I think it was just getting up there, getting to that point. I think it just maybe got too convoluted and just kind of repetitive, maybe. You know.
Well, I think it's one of those, since, you know, another thing we jumped on the subject is another thing that kind of we were talking about is it wants to be kind of a horror film, but at the same time, it pulls back.
Yeah.
And becomes kind of the movie that you find in the drama section with, like, Sex, Lies, and Videotape. You know, it is one of those, you know, there's a lot of drama, heavy drama in the film. But when it becomes kind of a horror film, it goes that route and hits really hard.
Yeah.
So it's another film that I think they do well mashing up the two, to make you scared of what he's seeing and what he believes might be there, might not be, whatever. Yeah. And also just dealing with the fact psychologically that he might be going crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I dig all those aspects of the film. It's one. It's always kind of stuck out with me because once it's over and you realize kind of what is happening and what's going on, you're like, You know, you kind of ponder what you actually just watched. Did you watch a horror film? Did you watch a drama? You know, yeah. I don't know. That's kind of how I feel about it.
It's definitely, you know, it's worth tracking down to watch, grab some alcohol, of course.
This is a film that I think would be really well suited for, in all honesty, I think this would be one that would be well suited for a remake.
Yeah,
Because I think this sort of weird psychological, like, mind fuckery, is, I don't think that audiences of 1988 were really looking for films like that, because I think it came out when everything was ripe for kind of, you know, the balls to the wall slasher. Whereas now we are a little bit more interested in the, you know, the tiptoeing between is this reality or is it not kind of thing. And I don't know. I think that it would go over really, really well just to see, like, somebody, you know, is his traumatic experience, you know, bringing out inner demons, or is it bringing out, you know, is he really being stalked and tortured kind of thing?
I can definitely see this being remade for sure. Because I think they were trying to juggle these two different things for the audiences of the late 80s, which that was the same year that the Blob remake came out, you know, and that movie is just balls to the wall insanity. You know, I'm trying to think what other horror movies came out in 88.
A shit ton.
Yeah, so I think this one, I think their aspirations were to make something a little more psychological, but they were trying to fit it in.
I also think that hurt them.
Yeah, they were trying to combine the two, and I think, you know, ultimately, you know, didn't work. And like I said, this movie's a mixed bag for me, but I'm so glad that I finished watching it, because it was a ton of fun.
I found this one at our local exchange store And it was on sale for $1, which usually means that either A, it's awesome and it means that they don't know what they have, or B, it's absolute dog shit and nobody wants it. And I was really hoping that it was option A, and I'm glad to say that it was option A. And I really, really enjoyed it. I hadn't seen it, but I really liked it. I liked it a lot more than I thought I thought I was going to. But yeah, I definitely did not feel like something from that time period. I could definitely feel the influences of sort of like a Nightmare on Elm Street kind of vibe with
part two?
Like the whole
Nightmare on Elm Street part two.
With the, yeah. With the kind of sexy gay dreams. But
it's very, I mean, all a lot of horror has homoerotic tendencies, but this one definitely does.
Oh, it's right on Front Street. It's,
yeah.
Which obviously this is, I'm a big fan of homoerotic horror, but that's not a secret. So the influences were pretty obvious, and I can't tell if that could have also been something that may have hurt the film. Perhaps. I don't know. Maybe people were against it because, you know, they already had their, you know, their dream killer. They didn't want another one.
Right.
Who knows? Yeah.
All right. We got to start wrapping up. We've been at this for about 2 hours.
Yeah.
So check this out. This is one that you can find. Where can people find this thing?
Well, it's on tape. You can buy it for like $6.99. Other than that, you're going to have to find other means.
Okay.
But there is, I have heard rumors over the past year or so that Code Red actually will be releasing this.
Oh,
very cool.
On Blu-ray. So we'll see if that actually happens. If it does, I might have to ask you to buy it for me, Sean, since he banned me.
It's $30 for this. I don't know. I would pay $12.99 to $15 for this on Blu-ray for sure. Hands down.
Juliet Cummings in HD.
Well, you drive a hard bargain, sir.
All I'm saying is that I don't have a lot of movies with Juliet Cummings in HD.
This needs to be remedied.
I think the only ones I have are Critters 3 and Friday the 13th.
That's a shame.
She's in part 4.
We'll see what we can do by getting more Juliet Cummings in HD for you. We want to thank all you guys for listening to us. We're super excited to have BJ back. Thank you, BJ, for gracing us with your presence again.
I've missed you guys.
Quick plug for myself. I'm going to be on a podcast called The Smell of Music.
Oh, my God.
On Wednesday, so tomorrow.
Gross.
This should post on Tuesday. We're talking rapcore.
Rapcore?
Oh, yeah.
That's the whitest thing you could have ever
said. Oh, man. What they do is they pick a genre and they talk about it. They have a guest. The guest chooses the playlist, and they basically listen to the playlist and all basically cringe together. It was a really fun time. So that'll be up on Wednesday. I don't know if they have a website or not. They have a Facebook, The Smell of Music, and they're also, you can just type in The Smell of Music on iTunes and you can find the show there.
The Smell of Music, if it's rap course, sounds like it would smell like Faygo.
This, yeah, probably. Oh man, I was cringing with some of the songs that I chose, because I used to like. I basically chose songs that I used to love and didn't listen to them at all. And
can you just name one?
Huh?
Can you name one that's not on the biscuit?
Hey Bartender by Head PE.
Wow.
Which is a lot more rapey than I thought it was when I initially
listened to it. Did you wear your fedora hat?
I wore my Junkos for the occasion.
You wore your fedora hat while you listened to it?
Yeah, fedora hat and Junkos.
Junkos?
Ew.
You mean
Jinkos? Jinkos, the J-N-C-O, whatever.
It's Brad, Jinkos.
We
already
know. Jinkos? I don't know.
Brad, we know that Sean doesn't know how to read. We don't.
I always said Jinkos. Okay. I don't know. J-N-C-O. There's no vowels. There's a vowel at the end. That's it.
You were doing so well on this episode, and you just totally fucked up right there.
Hey, I'm not perfect.
So are you saying all through high school you called them Junkos?
Junkos.
Oh, no.
I was in Iowa. We didn't know any better.
Junkos? Sean.
Jinkos? I don't know.
Junkos.
I don't give a shit. That was the 90s. Who gives a crap? All right. And with that, everyone, check out our sponsors. CoffeeShopOfHorrors.com. Buy their shit. Use the code SCREAMCAST. And then, of course, go to GrindhouseVideo.com and use the code SCREAMCAST10 when you order from them. It's really not that funny.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah. All right.
I was born in 1990. I know how to say the word right.
The fad lasted a year.
It's coming back, though.
Oh, God, I know.
It's coming back. Mallcore kids wear them.
They sure do.
Well, dude, I see pictures from that time in my life, and I'm like, what the fuck? I need to find those and send them to you guys. You guys would die.
Wait, you actually own Junkos?
Yes. And I had bleach blonde hair.
Oh, man, that's even worse because you actually owned it.
I listened to rapcore and ska core.
You didn't listen to rapcore. You listened to Head P.E.
P.O.D., you know, P.O.D., Head P.E.
That's right, because you were down with the G.O.D., you know, so of course you listened to P.O.D.
Limp Bizkit, but, you know, I kind of felt weird listening to Limp Bizkit because they were so evil. All right, with that... We're gonna sign off. All of you guys have a great week. I'll see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye.
See ya. Bye. Sean, you're the best.
Oh shit. Okay.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. Party's just begun.